This is mythical.
What's the best sparkling water? The Sport Crew says they have the answer. Check out their ranking of the best sparkling waters on the market, flavored or not.
Today's the ultimate battle of the deli meats, pastrami versus corned beef.
Man, why do we gotta pit two beefy queens against each other?
I like when you say beefy queens. This is a hot dog as a sandwich.
Ketchup is a smoothie.
Yeah, I put ice in my cereal, so what?
That makes no sense.
A hot dog is a sandwich.
A hot dog is a sandwich.
What?
Welcome to our podcast, A Hot Dog is a Sandwich, the show where we break down the world's biggest food debates. I'm your host, Josh Scherer.
And I'm your host, Nicole Anaiti.
And Nicole, today we're taking on two juggernauts of the Jewish deli world, even though neither of them are like traditionally maybe Jewish deli meats, but we grew up eating them at Jewish delis, and even like delis aren't necessarily Jewish, but like we think of them
Jewish style.
It's like Jewish style. It's become a Jewish tradition via the diaspora in New York, etc. Anyways, point is, corned beef versus pastrami. Some people think they're the same thing. They're not. They're wrong. Which one do you choose?
I used to think they were the same thing for the longest time as a kid. I was just like, I want the red meat.
I want the salty. I want the salty,
salty
delicious
red meat.
One.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And both of them are salty and delicious.
Exactly.
So I used to not care.
I lean more towards pastrami.
That makes sense.
Yeah, does it? Why?
Well, no. I mean, you are a woman of very discerning taste. That sounded creepy.
I am a woman.
No, it would have been creepier if I said, no, you're a female, right?
Yeah.
Now, females love... No, pastrami is just corned beef that has also been peppered and smoked.
Yum. Right? But isn't it fattier?
So, yeah, if you're going to break it down on, like, the minutiae, pastrami is typically made with a cut of beef called deckel.
Deckel.
That comes from, like, it has the top fattier part that's still, like, attached to it, whereas corned beef is traditionally made from brisket, although if you, like, really, really, really go into it, you can start breaking those down, and I think it's, like, somewhat safe to say that pastrami is a peppered and smoked corned beef. It can be fattier, but you can't also get fatty corned beef. Corned beef doesn't necessarily have to come from brisket, and traditionally it didn't.
I guess. Maybe it's just, I just think pastrami is easier to come upon in
this world.
Yeah, corned beef.
What do you mean?
I don't know. I mean, when I'm thinking of corned beef, I'm thinking of deli corned beef. I'm not thinking of like Irish.
Irish.
Sorry, Irish
this
corned
sounds
beef.
Like my grandmother.
No. The sauerkraut and potatoes and, you know, we're cooking the corned beef.
Sauerkraut's not Irish, dude.
What? What do you mean?
Do you think sauerkraut is like the most German thing in the world?
Okay, but what about the people that eat
corned
like,
beef and cabbage you're talking about?
Yeah, isn't cabbage sauerkraut?
Sauerkraut is lacto-fermented cabbage.
Okay,
it's
I'm
pickled
right.
cabbage.
Just say I'm right.
Oh my God, you are beauty, you are grace, you're the smartest person. This is coming off the heels. We were playing Jeopardy today because we do that every day on the little like app or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And Nicole, it was like, what's the most northern island of Japan? And Nicole's like, Hokkaido. And I was like, I don't think that's right. And I said, Okinawa. And then it was Hokkaido. So I need to trust Nicole's smarts more. And that's what we've learned today.
Thank you. That was really brave of you to say on a public platform.
No problem, Nicole. You deserve the credit where it is due. It is due right at your face.
Josh, what do you like more, corned beef or pastrami?
I don't know. What do you like?
I told you what I like.
Okay. I agree with you that when I was a kid, because like I grew up eating just large deli platters at any like Jewish family gathering, right?
Sure.
Like you'd be meeting for someone's birthday, and if it was between the hours of like 9 a.m. and noon, you would have the bagel and lox platter. If it was between like noon and 3 p.m., you just have the giant deli platter out there.
Yeah.
And that's what I grew up on. And I used to not even think about the difference between pastrami and corned beef because I was like, they're both just salty, delicious. Now that I've gotten older, my palate has become more refined, Nicole.
Yeah.
I prefer the purity of corned beef.
But how is it the purity if it's pastrami plus other things?
No, pastrami is corned beef plus other things.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
What do you mean?
What do you think pastrami is? Describe the process of making pastrami.
No. No, I thought, no, but this whole time, so corned beef is like you make a brine and you let it sit and then you smoke it, right?
You don't know. Corned beef isn't smoked. Corned beef is brined and then boiled.
Brined and boiled. Okay. But and then pastrami is just meat that you dry brine?
Well, so the interesting thing about that is pastrami, the root word of it, you mentioned basturma earlier.
Basturma, yeah.
Basturma is, I associate with Turkey, right? But also, I mean,
I think it's Armenian,
It's, you know, across that whole region. Yeah. The closest, like, root to the Jewish pastrami that we have today is probably brought from Romanian Jews, and it's called pastarma. But, of course, same root word going back to, like, ancient Latin. or whatever. And that was typically made using a dry brine. And then it would actually be like cold smoked sometimes. Mm. And it was typically made with, if it wasn't a Romanian Jew doing it, if it was just a Romanian, mm-hmm. They would probably be doing it with pork or lamb sometimes. But like there's even pastrama goose. It's just like a way of curing.
It's a process.
Yeah, it's a preservation method.
Pastramiing something.
Exactly. Well, but yeah. Not pastramiing, pastarmaing.
Pastarmiing.
Because you don't get the word pastrami until you see it in Jewish delis in like, you know, maybe the late 1800s, early 1900s in America. Mm-hmm. And the operating theory, there's not like a ton of etymological research about this, is that Romanian Jews who started opening up delis alongside German Yiddish Jews in New York, they were just like, we see the word salami is popular, especially because, you know, there were a ton of Italians living there at the time as well.
Cool.
They're like, we see the word salami is popular, pastrama, they'll get it, pastrami.
Oh, so they just co-opted it.
Yeah, they just co-opted it.
Cool.
And so when I think of like Jewish corned beef, I just think of effectively unsmoked, unpeppered pastrami.
Huh.
But there's something about like the purity. Nicole, you know how much I love boiled meats.
You are such a boiled meat man.
Oh, boiled sliced meat. But there's such like a beautiful craft to corned beef.
I agree. It definitely is. There's something about it I really, really like though. It's just good.
Yeah. And it's like, it's aromatic.
Yeah.
Because like typically, so you mentioned like the Irish corned beef and cabbage, right?
Yeah.
So corned beef was really, really huge as an export from Ireland. And there's a lot of historical reasons. God dang, Nicole, I'm about to spiral into a history lesson again.
I have nothing else better to do, so I'm down to get edumacated.
Okay, cool. So in the 1600s, Britain was like basically invaded and took over Ireland, right?
Yeah.
And then the two economies, you say that like, you know, and then they passed like a cattle export ban. So you couldn't, like, export cattle from Ireland to Britain for some odd reason. But in Ireland, Ireland had a much lower salt tax than England. So it was, like, one-tenth the price. Ireland had a much lower salt tax than England.
Okay.
Salt was, like, the tax was literally one-tenth of what it was in England.
Sure.
So basically they were like, we got a bunch of cattle. We need to preserve it. Mm-hmm. We're going to, you know, just use all this cheap-ass salt to just pack into the beefs, and they would use every part of the cow for this, and then they would typically can it. And then this is like, you know, kind of later in the future a little bit, they had a huge demand from navies at the time. So like Ireland was basically just exporting all of this corned beef. But that said, people in Ireland, they were so exploited by the British and all the taxes and the tariffs and the bans and all that, that they like couldn't afford to eat the beef themselves.
Oh, wow.
So corned beef was a big thing that, like, the Irish saw as a huge luxury and they would export, but, like, they weren't eating that too much. Then the Irish, especially during the Great Famine of the 1860s, Nicole, are you tracking this?
I'm, like, disassociating pretty hardcore, but it's nice for you to speak and, like, make eye contact with me. So I'm like, here.
This is the quality time.
I understand. I understand. I'm following.
Great Famine in the 1860s, the Irish.
Because of the potatoes?
Because of the potato blight. Yeah, there's a potato blight, but it was more because of the British extractionist crappy policies that made, yeah. So anyways, Nicole's bored. I'm going to wrap this up. The Irish move in large waves to New York City, especially, and they start living next to who, Nicole?
The Jews.
The Jews. They started living. They really did. There's a bunch of songs from the early 1900s.
Oh, nice.
This is all from like 20 minutes of me reading about it.
Nice.
I'm fascinated with this.
It is fascinating.
There are a bunch of songs from like the early 1900s, like about the Jewish-Irish connection.
Nice.
And like Romeo and Juliet stories and folk songs about it. It's really cool.
Romeo Jewish?
No.
Is Juliet Jewish?
That's not. I'm saying like that forbidden love between the Irish community and the Jewish community was a big thing in 1900 songs. Anywho, so then the Irish get here and the Jewish deli owners are like, yo, we got these giant slabs of corned beef and beef in America is hella cheap.
Mm-hmm.
And the Irish are making a lot more money in New York than they did in Ireland. And they're like, yo, corned beef, like that stuff that we used to be deprived of, like, hell yeah, give that to me. So it became a big Irish-American thing, even though corned beef, especially with cabbage, is like hardly eaten at all in Ireland itself.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So it's like an immigrant food.
Yeah, it's very much like an immigrant food. It's like the orange chicken of Irish Americans, right?
That's really interesting.
Yeah, and then so that became a Jewish deli staple in a big part because demand from Irish Americans.
Sure.
And then you have the Romanian Jews with their pastrami via pastrami, And so now we have these two delicious meats, Nicole, that we get to debate about and we get to choose.
I know, we're so lucky.
We're so lucky.
So what's your go-to like sandwich out of jelly other than, what is it, liver, chopped onion? What's your other one? When you're at a deli, like you're always going towards the corned beef? Corned beef Reuben? Pastrami Reuben?
This is tough. So Reuben is typically made with pastrami.
Yes.
And Reuben is typically made with sauerkraut, Russian dressing, and Swiss cheese.
Marble rye.
On marble rye.
Yeah,
good marble
gotta
rye.
Gotta do the marble rye.
I love the idea of a Reuben more than I love an actual Reuben.
Sure, I totally understand that.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, but a Reuben, like, you have your preferences with a Reuben, I feel like. Everyone does. Mine's pastrami, if you were wondering.
Is that your standard order when you go to a deli, that
no,
you get a pastrami Reuben?
No, it's not my standard order, but there's something about a Reuben sandwich that I feel like every human needs to, like, zero in on.
Yeah.
And you need to find out what meat you like. I just like a pastrami sandwich. I think I actually said this in the last podcast, the 100 Foods You Need to Eat Before You Die. I think it was a pastrami sandwich on some sort of bread. I don't remember the bread with mustard.
Well, what kind of bread do you go? Like we're at a deli right now.
Like
we're going to Brent's in Northridge, Nicole.
Fun field trip.
You never been to
Brent's? I've never been to Brent's, but I had a friend who worked there, and I was always like, hey, Lily, can I come? And she's like, no.
It's a great Jewish deli.
Yeah.
It's just a schlep.
I've heard Brent's is very, very good. I'm going to get, well, it depends what kind of bread they have. I really do like just a rye. I do like rye bread.
Marble or just like
just
a good
regular
caraway seeded rye.
And I like it only lightly toasted on one side.
I don't get toasted. You get toasted on your
pastrami
sandwich?
Yes.
I would never get it toasted.
Let me tell you what it is. You have to toast it and then you put the mustard on the untoasted part.
Mm.
And then so you can have the crunchy bread and then the soft bread.
That is listen, I respect the discernment of your taste.
Yeah. Do you like coleslaw in your pastrami / corned beef sandwiches?
No, but that's a big thing. Okay, so the only time I've been to a legit New York deli, Nicole, are you ready for the Jewishness of this sentence?
Yeah.
I went to Katz's Deli with the Feldman brothers, who I met on Birthright. And then they took me to Katz's.
That's cool.
It was really cool. I went as an appetizer to another dinner that I was going to.
Sounds like something that happens in New York a lot.
Yes.
Is it true? Like, people just, like, eat. Like, they have, like, first dinner and then second
everything's
dinner.
Everything's so close to each other,
yeah.
And everything's open. So, and then we went bar hopping. We just went to, like, 8 different places.
That's fun.
Went to Katz's. I didn't know how to take the subway, so I walked 2.5 miles there, and I was, like, afraid to hail a cab because I literally thought I'd try and hail a cab, and the cabbie would be like, that's not how you do it, idiot, and then drive away.
Because that's how, like, everyone in New York talks.
Yes. And so I just walked, and I showed up there sweaty because I thought it was cold in New York, and I only brought long pants. Anywhom. I get there. I'm super hungry. I get a corned beef sandwich on rye with chopped liver on it. And that, to me, is the ideal deli sandwich.
Did anybody look at you funny?
No. That's just like a...
Is that a normal thing to get?
It must be.
That's so incredible.
You know?
I love chopped liver. That's what I'm saying.
I love
never
chopped
knew
liver.
That was a thing I could get.
And I love it as a condiment on a deli sandwich in the same way that you'd put pate on like a banh mi, right?
Sure, absolutely.
And so that is my ideal deli sandwich. Yeah. And I don't even need mustard on the sandwich. I have mustard on the side. And
for
like,
dipping.
Of course, you go to Katz's and the sandwiches are, you know, 9 inches
tall. Double decker, yeah.
And so you're just eating half the meat plain on its own, dipping it in mustard. And then we got a knish, and then we got a hot dog.
What's
and I had to
knish?
Try the Reuben. What's a knish?
I don't eat
knishes. Oh, my God, Nicole, I get to teach you about our culture. It's like a flaky pastry that's typically filled with potato. Yeah. Ashkenazi Jews. We figured out how to put starch
on
starch.
Sounds like a burek.
Yeah, really similar, yeah. It's like a German Yiddish burek.
I love both so much, but I just lean towards pastrami. Have you ever had the Hat before?
Yes, I've
never been to the Hat, but every single time I pass one of those billboards, I'm like, damn it, I really got to go to the Hat.
Okay, so the Hat is like a Southern California institution.
Yeah.
There were some by me where I grew up in Orange County, about 50 miles south of LA. And the pastrami that they serve, it is like, if you think of Jewish jelly pastrami, right, you're thinking of like that fatty deckel or brisket that's been smoked super long. It's super tender. Like, I remember watching the pastrami jiggle at Katz's, Nicole. Katz's, they brine their pastrami for 3 weeks. They boil it for 3 days. They smoke it for 3 days.
Ah!
And then they steam it before they slice it.
Wow.
So it is just a jiggly, fatty deliciousness. Mm. You go to a place like the Hat, they're slinging like fast and dirty pastrami sandwiches. That stuff's just coming from a factory. that you
I
know,
still want to try. Does it have like the pepper on the side of it and it's like curled a little bit?
It's, yeah, it's curled because the fat's still kind of hard. You'll get some gristly pieces.
But that's like that
represents
so
the two different kinds of pastrami, right?
Yeah, but I feel like you don't get that sort of spectrum with corned beef.
You don't. And I think that's a problem. Yeah. I want more corned beef specialists out there. Give me the young, cool hipster Jews. Nicole, there's like hipster Jews making like cool Ashkenazi Jewish, like smoked and kippered fish.
Yeah.
You know, they're doing like burnt habanero and cilantro stem, you know, kippered salmon.
Cool.
Why can't we get that with corned beef?
Well, you know? There's a pop-up called The Bad Jew, and she makes pork strami.
She's making pork strami,
which is
but
pretty freaking cool, if you ask me. But I don't know. I just can't wrap my head around why. There's something about the two of them. Like, if I saw them both on a plate, which one would I eat, like, on its own? I don't know.
Pastrami's more inviting. Pastrami's sexier. Pastrami, Nicole's, is sexier meat.
I kind of think corned beef is sexier on its own.
In the way that, like,
no, I'm flip-flopping. I don't know.
You ever, like, you know, really, like, see your partner without makeup, and you're like, man, that's, like, that's true. That's true
beautiful
sexiness right there. That is beauty. There's something about just the naked clothes. That's like unadorned corned beef. Nicole, corned beef, sexy queen, sexy beefy queen corned beef doesn't need the adornment of the pepper, of the spices, of the smoke. No, it's there.
I kind of like I'm like right now I'm like having like a moment in my mind. Like I have like I literally right here, okay?
Yeah,
like,
I'm imagining
it. Imagining it. There's one plate of pastrami and there's one plate of corned beef and you're literally supposed to just try one. Which one are you going for? Because right now my initial instinct is pastrami, but now that we've been talking about it so much, maybe it's corned beef.
Nicole, lean into the wet suppleness.
It's so wet
of the corned beef.
It gets it is so wet.
It is the meat designed to be soaked. If that's not sexy, I don't know what is. The soaked beef sheets.
And there's like a level of like fat sometimes on the top, and you're like, wow.
just poached
Maggie,
fat.
Maggie, are you okay?
Gelatinous, white, and jiggling. Maggie, just imagine that. You give it a little slap.
Maggie needs to leave.
You give, Maggie's Google searching soaked beef sheets right now. What do we got? Not nearly as dirty as we thought the results would be.
Have you ever had the Hillshire Farm ones that are like corned beef pastrami?
You're talking about like just straight like lunch meat.
The one with the red Tupperware top.
Yes, yes, yes.
I love those too, though.
I do too.
There's a place for those too.
That's what I grew up on.
Yeah, me too.
If you had to choose between, if I'm choosing on those, Nicole, I'm going pastrami.
I'm going pastrami just because it has pepper on the side.
Same. I've been big news in my life. I've been buying a lot of lunch meat recently.
Good for you.
So I found that I really enjoy, if I need a nice healthy snack, I'll grab a fistful of ham. And then that's my
You have ham
snack
in the house?
Yeah, it must be nice, right? we're modern Jews.
I'm kidding. Okay, so what I want to know is what about all of the different kinds of corned beef, because corned beef means different things to different people, aside from the Jewish deli stuff.
That's
what
true
about the canned stuff?
Nicole, I have an entire case of Pure Foods brand corned beef from the Philippines.
Oh.
One of my best friends, Emil, shout out Emil, thanks for bringing all the nice Filipino snacks as a gift. I was like, hey, man, thanks for letting me stay here tonight. Here's a pallet
of
corned beef.
What a gentleman. What a mensch.
And I also grew up on corned beef hash in a can.
Yeah, there's like corned beef hash. And then Libby's, the one where you have to use like the weird like pin to open
it.
Yeah. Why are they called corned beef?
Okay, well, so it is corn, like the corning process. Corn referred to the size of the salt kernels. This is just information that I know.
This is so interesting.
This isn't like planning for this.
So
this
you're not
portioning. It looks like corn kernels.
Okay.
And so they would just dump a bunch of these corn-ass looking salt kernels.
What kind of salt?
Into a tub. It was just sea salt, Nicole, from this Irish sea. Any questions?
Koshering and corning are the same thing.
Yeah, man. Come on. It's just all salt and you're just all salt and all the beefs. Actually, did you know? Hold on. Did you know the original corned beef recipe in Ireland, Nicole, they actually used sea ash. They would burn, Nicole, check this out. They would burn salty seaweed and then cover that in ash.
Wow.
Yeah.
That sounds great. And I won't be surprised if some weirdo makes an LA pop-up about that. Corn beef with sea ash.
We got 900-year-old corned beef recipe.
That's
covered
cool
in sea ash.
Why don't you do that for this meal? Why don't you do that for the Meals of History show?
Oh, that'd be good.
Yeah.
Oh, hey. Yeah. Oh, that's a great pitch.
Thanks.
You know what? You know what? You know what I think is really cool? You got there's been a big pastrami resurgence.
Yeah, pastrami sexy.
Pastrami sexy again. There was when I was doing my pop-up at Smorgasburg, Stony Bologna Artisanal
Chimichangas. How many years ago was that? Like 5 years ago?
Yeah, and it's all I can seem to talk about. But that said, I lost $5,000. Not a great time for me. We're proud of the work that we did. But the dude next to me, Nicole... The dude next to me, I'm such a good businessman. The dude next to me, Ugly Drum Pastrami.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like he kicked off a wave of like craft pastrami where like you take the brisket or the deckle and you do it almost Texas style.
Mm-hmm.
And like that's the way you slice it. And these really gorgeous. Just thick, it is a thick, salted, brined, peppery brisket yeah. that jiggles like Texas brisket.
Yeah.
You know?
You know who's also doing it really good? I love Wexler's.
Yeah.
Wexler's is
another new school cool kid deli in Los Angeles
yeah,
that's making
Friedman,
craft pastrami.
Friedman.
Wait, no. I think do they make their own? I think Ugly Drum makes a pastrami for Wexler's.
Do they?
I don't know. I could be talking out of my tuchus here, Nicole. But that said, there hasn't been a cool kid craft corned beef resurgence. What if we're the ones to do it?
I have nothing better. Like I said, I have nothing better to do.
If you're down, I'm down. Do you think corned beef sexy again?
Yeah. I think so. We just got to change the name. Corned has a negative connotation to it.
Salt beef.
No.
More. Horn beef. Come on down and get some of that horn beef. You're all horned up for some beef, aren't you? Come down to Josh and Nicole's Horn Beef Emporium.
Horn Emporium. Horn, beef. Horn Emporium.
Hardcore horn beef.
We got a lot of horns. They should make like, well, not us, but like someone should do
hard corn beef. Okay, it's a stretch to get you there from the pun, but I do respect and appreciate it. You ever had pastrami like in a dish that doesn't typically have pastrami, and you're like, "Hey, now, what the heck's going on
you're
here?"
You're a rock star, like pastrami fries or pastrami burger?
Fries,
pastrami burger,
pastrami burger.
I like pastrami
I'm thinking specifically of there's a restaurant that makes a pastrami pad kee mao. It's so like a Thai stir fried noodle
yes,
with a bunch of pastrami.
Oh yes, I've had that before. Yes, I've had that before.
How do you feel about that?
It's okay.
It's not.
It doesn't like change my life. It was a good dish.
There's like pastrami tacos at a spot in New York.
No.
A chef named Alex Stupak was doing it. I remember that was a big deal back in the day. I feel like the best application of pastrami is on a sandwich.
I agree. I do love a good pastrami sandwich. I think I do love a good pastrami burger, though.
Ooh, that's a part of our childhoods growing
pastrami
up in Southern California.
Pastrami burgers, kind of fire with a nice onion ring in there. Oh.
Oof. One of my favorite genre of restaurants, and this is something that is like somewhat unique to Southern California, typically because of our big multicultural influence.
Sure.
And a lot of these places were owned by Greek immigrants, which is funny.
Yeah.
But it is like a diner style, but like not a sit-down diner, like an order-at-the-counter diner. And they serve charbroiled burgers, hot dogs, bean burritos, crispy beef tacos, pastrami sandwiches, and teriyaki bowls.
Are you talking about Johnny Pastrami right now?
I'm talking about Johnny Pastrami.
I'm talking about
King's Burgers, which also now has a sushi bar inside of it.
Incredible.
But to me, that's like you go there and the pastrami is not good.
Yeah.
It's not like the best craft pastrami you're ever going to have.
Yeah.
But the best part about it is that you can get a plate of like chili cheese fries topped with pastrami, a pastrami burger with like blue cheese on it, and then like a teriyaki bowl for dessert. And that to me is a really beautiful thing.
I have a story about Johnny Pastrami.
What's your story about Johnny Pastrami?
I went for my 21st birthday to Johnny Pastrami.
Why? What a place to celebrate.
I don't know. I was dating a weird guy at that time. But it was a really good sandwich. It was like soft.
That's
it was
in the story?
Yeah, that's it. Was that good? Yeah, you're right. We need a corned beef resurgence in the US today.
Yeah.
We need to make it sexy again. We need to rebrand it. We need to make it as sexy as pastrami is. But I just don't know how to do it.
I do.
Okay.
You need two sexy spokespeople. Nicole, you need two young, sexy, 30, flirty, and thriving corned beef, horned beef
29.
Spokespeople. Well, wait. We need to get our business plan together.
Okay.
And then Josh and Nicole's Horned Beef Emporium can open up probably somewhere in like Lancaster. It's going to be maybe 50 miles outside of LA.
Aren't there a lot of religious zealots in Lancaster?
Yeah, we just need to get them on our side.
Okay,
you know,
okay,
we need to convince
okay.
them. We need to convince them that, like, I don't know, I can't speak to the anti-Semitic nature of the Lancaster potentially.
Okay.
But like, you know, we'll cater their church potlucks or whatever.
Sure.
I don't know. We'll figure it out.
Okay.
But either way, come down to Josh and Nicole's Horned Beef Emporium down in Lancaster, California, circa 2024. And we'll get your beef sheets nice and wet.
Let's get corny.
That's the Josh and Nicole guarantee. Wow, why I'm making noises today. I had 110 grams of just whey protein before noon today, and that's a problem. All right, Nicole, we've heard what you and I have to say. Now it's time to find out what other wacky ideas are rattling out there in the Twitterverse. It's time for a segment we call
Opinions Are Like Casseroles.
I need an antacid, dude. I need something to quell my tummy pains because it is a gurgling.
Drink water.
I already had a Diet Red Bull.
It's not water.
No, it's better than water. It's got nutrients in it.
There's no nutrient content. Ew, 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 ew. Do you need a spit bucket?
I don't know what happened. No, we're good.
Okay, start the first one, please, if you can.
All right, first up, we got, hey, Nicole, you're a fan of podcasts, right?
I love podcasts.
Can I pitch you on a new podcast to listen to? Do you mind if I do that right now?
I mean, I don't know if I have time, but make it quick.
Listen. Okay, so I'll make it quick. So Trevor Talks Too Much is hosted by Trevor Evers. He's a member of the Mythical Kitchen that we all know and love.
I'm familiar.
And what he does, Nicole, is he sits down with somebody who's part of an industry that you love, such as gaming or maybe even sports. Sometimes they dance, sometimes they sing, and then Trevor has a really great conversation with them. His episode with Justa Minx is one of the funniest damn things I've ever heard. And Justa Minx is, I mean, just what a precocious, very vulgar woman. She ends up paying Trevor $24 because she can't stop swearing. And it was a whole thing. All right. At the Nick Novak, the combination of peanut butter, chili, and crushed Doritos are fantastic and deeply underrated hot dog toppings together. He recommends peanut butter on the bun, chili followed by Doritos on top of the dog.
No.
Yeah. No. Wait, you're not into this?
No.
Peanut butter and chili. I add peanut butter to my chili, which all the Texans are going to really love and respect. They're going to go, wow, Josh.
No.
I know that follows several savory peanut butter adaptations of international recipes.
No.
You seem very smart.
I do like the chili and crushed Doritos, but the peanut butter? Nah, I can't do that.
You're wrong.
No, I'm not.
You're wrong.
I'm not wrong. Vince DeLong says sweet pickles are not pickles. They should be called whole relish. I agree. Sign me up. Where do I petition for this? I am 100% down for that.
We issued the decree. Sweet pickles have been plaguing us for too long. They are now whole relish, and I know to stay away from them because I love little chopped pickles on things. I do not enjoy pre-prepared pickle relish.
I love pickled relish.
You love pickle relish?
Yes.
But it
serves its purpose.
Yeah, it's sweet and gloopy.
It's good on a hot dog. It's really good on a hot dog.
I haven't got a hot dog in a long time. I got a hot dog from Katz's. It was just a fine.
Why
hot
did
dog.
You get a hot? That's
because
like
he
going.
Said, he said you got to get the hot.
That's
dog.
Like going to a sushi restaurant and getting a pasta. What are you talking about?
I'll get sushi pasta. I don't care.
You're weird.
At Nathan Brink 4, French fried onions make basically any savory dish better. It's criminal they only show up on tables on Thanksgiving.
These are great.
Yeah, I got a story
about
this.
I love them. Oh, yeah?
A story about this?
Does it involve going on a date on your 21st birthday to the French Onion Factory?
Yeah, Nicole, I went to the French Onion Factory, a restaurant that absolutely exists. Oh, you're talking about, like, the French's Onion Factory, not a restaurant called the French Onion Factory, like the Cheesecake Factory, where all they serve are 40 varieties of French onion soup.
Obviously, bro. Keep up.
No, I bought, okay, so one, Julia refuses to throw anything away.
Yes. Right?
We had like half a can of French's fried onions left over after last Thanksgiving, because we only went through 1.5 cans for our green bean casserole. So that's just been sitting in our pantry for forever. I started using them as salad croutons.
Yes.
That's the end of the story.
That's
I guess.
A great
you know,
story.
I kind of thought there was more there,
that's
and
a
then
really
there
good
wasn't.
Situation.
But I did that. It's good as hell.
Such a good story. You know? I love that story.
Terrible story.
Innovation. Dietary Fiber says the best milkshake is a butter milkshake, vanilla ice cream base, a tad of vanilla extract, and a heaping healthy of them sweet cultured cream remains. Mm. I've never had one, but there are people out there that drink buttermilk. I've never been that person, but this does look good. Look real good.
Something gets me all hot and heavy when you're talking about a heaping helping of sweet cultured cream remains. And I effing love buttermilk ice cream. I made a bunch of buttermilk ice cream.
Cool.
Isn't that the coolest thing you've ever heard, Nicole?
That is
wow,
cool.
Oh my God, because you're like, wow, you make ice cream out of milk and cream, but buttermilk?
That is
oh my
cool.
God.
I'm not being a dick. I'm being honest. I think it's cool.
And you know what I did with one of them, with one of those batches, Nicole? I made a milkshake out of it.
Oh, was it good?
Oh my God, so good.
Did you put salt in it?
Yeah.
Because we love salted malted milkshakes. We love salted Mythical Kitchen.
There's one thing you know about the Mythical Kitchen. We love salted malted milkshakes.
Correct.
All right, at X-Man's Burger 15, scones or scones, if you're British, they're like some... Oh, scones are garbage, is what they said. They're like someone was trying to make a muffin but used Bisquick instead of love. Scone. Okay, here's how you know scones are garbage. Every time you go to a coffee shop and late in the day and you want a pastry, yeah. they go, all that's left are scones. And you go, you know why? Because they suck.
Yeah. I love a good scone. And I like a good fruit scone. I don't like a chocolate scone.
Oxymoron. The term good scone doesn't exist.
I like scones. Well, the thing is it a scone or a scone? Because scones, I feel like, are the ones with the ridges on the outside.
Are they?
And a scone is the one that's like freeform.
I don't know. I mean, we consider it like a scone in America. So Brits don't have biscuits. I mean, their biscuits are cookies, of course. But an American biscuit to a Brit is likely the closest equivalent is a scone, right?
Sure.
Or a scone. But then in America, we make scones and we're dropping all kinds of fruits in it, maybe some chocolate, whatever. I like a scone. I just like it less than any other pastry that anyone would likely have. You know what I mean?
A good scone is good, man. I used to make these incredible fig and cheese scones. They were like, and chocolate scones. Ugh, they were fire.
It's good. I like things that are kind of intentionally crappy that makes either coffee or tea taste better. You know what
this
I mean?
This is one of those things.
Like, I love like, one of my favorite things is like a concha, right?
Oh,
which like
sure.
by itself, it's, you know, it's very kind of crusty. It's a little bit dry. It's a little bit sweet. But when you're drinking it with or when you're eating it with coffee, that's an incredible experience.
Sure.
You're dipping it. You're sipping it. It's a great time. So that's how I feel about a scone. It needs to be with a liquid.
Okay. Nate Maste 22 says, warm Dr. Pepper is a better complement to any smoked or grilled meat than any commercially available sauce. Sure. I understand why you feel this way. I've never done it.
This is a good hot take.
Yeah. This is smart.
You know, people will like spritz down barbecued meats with like apple cider vinegar or something.
Yes.
I would just do that with straight Dr. Pepper. It would create a nice little caramelly bark on it. Tons of complexity in there. There's more aromatics in Dr. Pepper than there is in your barbecue sauce.
Absolutely.
This sounds like a heck of an invention. I want to do it.
Same.
I've never done it.
This is a good idea.
Oh, doctor, just straight Dr. Pepper ribs? Dang, good stuff. Ooh, terrible opinion coming up. At Kane WJ, Kraft Singles dipped in chocolate pudding is delicious.
Wow, sharp left.
That's a big
this
turn.
This is a sharp left.
Kane, I really respect that you have such developed tastes and that you seem to really know what you want out of life, which is great, but I dislike the fact that you've ruined my day.
This sounds gross.
Yeah,
sorry.
This is...
Tapioca, though.
Tapioca.
Sign me the F up.
Yeah. The problem isn't cheese and pudding. That's
no,
a good combo.
No, it's the chocolate.
It's the chocolate of it all.
It's upsetting, but
yeah,
the chocolate.
Yeah.
Butterscotch? Ugh.
That'd be great.
That's worse.
That's worse?
Oh, wait.
Why?
And now I'm thinking in my head why that would be better.
Butterscotch will be better because it would remind me of Brunost.
Yektost.
Big
Yektost fan.
What's it like a Norwegian caramel?
It's caramelized cheese.
It's basically like a caramelized American cheese.
So good.
You're making that. Yeah. Hey, Kane, just maybe try switching to butterscotch pudding.
Yeah.
See, I mean, if you think chocolate is the best, but, you know. Try it. We're experts.
Yeah, we are professional food people. JDZX4 says mashed potatoes should be utilized in more breakfast dishes.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and flip that one. I think shredded potatoes should be utilized in more lunch and dinner dishes.
I love mashed potatoes. Mashed potatoes are my favorite.
How would you utilize it in a breakfast dish?
I would put a bed of mashed potatoes, and then I would put sunny side eggs, and then bacon.
You treat it like grits?
Yeah.
Kind of sounds nice.
Sounds really nice.
A little
nice.
Soft egg and mashed potatoes?
Mm.
I'm kind of in.
Who needs polenta, baby? You got potatoes.
Fair. That's fair. At Ghostface Kayla, great screen name, Kayla. Good stuff. Cake is better on its own or without a ton of frosting. Sometimes I feel frosting hides bad or dry cake attempts. I'm gonna stop this right there.
Yes.
That's good.
What?
That's good that frosting hides bad cake. That's the point. It's great. Most cakes are not like great. Like a lot of people are bad at making stuff.
Sure.
And then frosting fixes it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they go on to argue the cake is the most important part, and I feel a lot of times frosting overpowers the cake, which should be the star. That's only if you're making great cake.
If you're making a good cake, and I'm talking about like maybe a blood orange upside down cake.
Oh,
if you're making that, you obviously don't need a frosting. But if you're making a layer cake and you're making a box cake, use the frosting.
I understand. They're making the Texas barbecue argument, right?
Oh, if it's so good you don't need barbecue sauce?
Yeah. It's like that might be true. Howmstever, 99% are not going to be you know, to that level.
For sure,
and
for
so
sure.
I'm going to do what I need. I'm going to do what I need to get it down, you know?
Yeah. One tip for making your cakes less dry, poke some holes in them and then make a little milk soak out of a little bit of vanilla extract and whole milk.
Yeah, I'm curious what Ghostface Kayla would say about a cake soak.
Cakes, you need to learn about cake soaks.
Well, no, I mean, they may know, but they may think that is an affront to the quality of cake, too. Like, if you're good enough at making cake, your cake should stand alone.
Tres Leches has entered the chat.
Bro.
Come on.
Best way to save a bad cake, soak it in as many kinds of milks as you can afford.
Tres Leches cake is one of the best cakes ever in the history of life. Underrated. We don't talk about it too much.
I want to make a pandan Tres Leches.
We have pandan leaves.
We have pandan leaves?
Yeah.
Dude, sick. But, like, where's the time? Where's the time?
I know. Is it my turn?
Yeah.
Sunshine Nick says strawberry flavored things taste better than strawberries. Yes, strawberry medicine is my favorite. My mom used to give me strawberry medicine all the time, and it turned out great.
I'm a cherry medicine guy.
Ew.
And I Nicole, I don't know if you know this about me. I eat about 2 to 3 pounds of strawberries a week.
I didn't know you were a strawberry eater.
I wasn't until Julia converted me. That's one of our fun little couple things.
She makes you eat fruit.
Well, I really love fruit. Bro, I ate two apples before 9 a.m. today. I just sat in like the little foyer in the office and stared at people.
Are you a fruit eater?
I'm a huge fruit eater.
I didn't know
I eat all those frozen blueberries.
I had no idea you were such a fruit man.
You've seen my giant sacks of blueberries.
Yeah, but that's just blueberries. Blueberries aren't real fruit.
What even? Blueberries are real. They're so dense with antioxidants.
They're fake.
I eat apples all the time. I run through a ton of fresh pineapple. Julie and I will take a little bit of whipped cream and we'll like chop strawberries. We'll put just little dollops of whipped cream. And sometimes, Maggie, look at me. And sometimes we'll put like some crushed granola on there. And it's just fun.
It's so cute.
You know,
cute
it's like a
Josh,
fun, healthy.
So cute, Josh being wholesome with his wife. I love it.
Yeah,
it
it's
brings
a good
me
time.
Much joy. I love that.
It's a good time. Yeah, we'll watch like, she likes watching Catfish, you know, the show.
Such a good show.
Just kind of watching Catfish.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Eating strawberries and whipped cream.
You guys like got a lot of whipped cream.
That's a good.
You talk about eating whipped cream a lot.
Oh, we do. We keep at least 2 to 3 bottles because once you
crazy, man.
Run out of one, then Nicole, that's like a warning because you run out of one, your next night's not ruined. You don't got to immediately go to the grocery store.
Do you have it every night?
No, probably 3-4 nights a week.
That's
a nice little treat. Sometimes
you guys are so freaking cute.
Yeah, we're.
You're
and on that note, thank you for listening to A Hot Dog Is a Sandwich. If you want to hear more from us here in the Mythical Kitchen, we got new episodes for you every Wednesday.
If you want to be featured on Opinions Are Like Casseroles, you can hit us up on Twitter at Mythical Chef or @Hendizada with the hashtag Opinion Casserole.
And for more Mythical Kitchen, check us out on YouTube where we launch new videos every week.
And of course, if you want to share pictures of your dishes, hit us up on Instagram at Mythical Kitchen.
See you next time.